Now, on the line, I have Senator Aidan O'Riordan. Good morning, Senator O'Riordan.
Morning. How are you?
I'm in great form. And yourself?
Oh, sure, not too bad. Not too bad.
Sure. Isn't the sun shining? And that's all we can ask.
Well, it was very wet last night when I was coming home, but it seems to have cleared up, and I have one leaf to drop under my belt this morning. So day is going reasonably well.
Well, luckily enough, I was well tucked up in my bed when all that rain started last night, so I'm quite happy with that.
Very, very sensible.
And as long as it doesn't close Salog for me this afternoon, and I'll be smiling for the rest of the day. And you're wondering, what's Salog? Salog Golf Course. Since I retired, I've gone mad into playing golf. And so,
right. I have to say, now you caught me unaware. I didn't know what you were talking about. Grand. Well, okay. Well, enjoy.
Well, you know, now I wanted to chat to you about two things that are very close to my heart. One is the number 14 bus, because it just goes right by my house. And the other thing is this Tusla 20-day challenge. And I know it's something that would be close to your heart as well. But I really believe we need our young people educated. And we need to give them the best opportunity they can. And they need to be prompted. So can you tell us a little about what the Tusla 20-day challenge is?
Well, it's an initiative that's important. I mean, when we talk about young people, I think often we forget just how impressionable they are at a very young age. I can give you some statistics that might surprise or frighten possibly some of your listeners, that your average three-year-old has, if depending on their income bracket, if they are a disadvantaged three-year-old, they have about 400 words in their vocabulary. If they are an advantaged three-year-old, they have about 1,200. So there's actually a huge difference in the oral language capacity of two different three-year-olds. And often we think that the school system can make the difference in a child's life. It's actually the parents and the community that raise that child which has the biggest influence. So I suppose what Tusla are trying to do is to raise focus again on child empowerment, on the sanctity of childhood, on what childhood is all about. And I think that's a positive initiative. Now, you know, I think when people talk about early intervention, they often assume we talk when a child is 5 or 6. Often, you know, a huge amount of influence, positive or negative, can happen on a child before that. And if you think actually where we are in the north side, there's some really great initiatives such as Preparing for Life in the Dublin 17 area, which has made huge strides in empowering parents to make the proper decisions around diet, around oral language, around literacy, and I suppose what Tusla are trying to promote is that, you know, give this a go for 20 days, and try to embed some good practices into your parenting and into your interactions with children.
Do you know Fergus McCabe?
I do very well, yeah, of course, yeah.
Well, Fergus is my brother-in-law, and I remember chatting with Fergus about, you know, his work within the inner city. And he used to say to me that one of the biggest issues he saw was that there were a lot of initiatives for children up to the age of 10 years of age, getting them to school, keeping them in school, and so forth. But once they hit 10, it seemed to be like a cliff.
Well, that's because often children below age 10 are often easier to handle. And then from 10 onwards, difficulties arise. You know, they begin to, behavior can take a different turn. They begin to be more independent. They begin to talk back a little bit more if that's what they want to do. They find interest in the opposite sex. Sexuality is more important to them. They're tempted by things such as substance abuse or misuse or whatever. So, yeah, and big decisions and choices are made by young people in that period of time, and from 10 years on. So yeah, so we have to have focus right throughout childhood, I suppose. What Tusla are promoting, and what everybody in the political system, I suppose, should also be promoting, is that, you know, childhood lasts until 18 years of age, but there is often an assumption that school going age is one that makes a big difference. And I suppose my experience is that you talk to a principal of any school, and as a principal myself, you'll have 2 4-year-olds in front of you, and you know which 4-year-old is going to cause you challenges, and you know which 4-year-old is going to be possibly okay in 10 years' time because they're very apparent. One of them will be rested and clean and have their breakfast eaten and had their homework done the previous night or whatever, and then you have or been read to, and the other will have none of those things. So don't be surprised if you fast forward in 10 years and there's issues. In the United States, for example, they can actually project and predict the number of prison spaces you're going to need by assessing the literacy rates of 10-year-olds, and that's what they do. They look at the literacy rates of 10-year-olds, and they can tell from that how many prison spaces they're going to need in a given district in 15 years' time. So the correlation between reading, education, empowerment, parental support, and making the right choices is quite clear.
And you know what the frightening thing there is that they then put all the money into getting those prison spaces ready, rather actually putting the money into the children and turning the whole situation round.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense morally, ethically, financially at all. But it's sometimes in politics it's cheaper and easier to talk about being tough on crime and, you know, longer sentences and mandatory sentences and lock them up and throw away the key. And it's very difficult to argue against that when somebody has done something horrendous or somebody has been, has perpetrated a crime, which is a burglary or an assault or a mugging or something. It's not easy to have sympathy for that person. But often if you track back to that person's background, there was always a 3-year-old there at one point who had an opportunity to be loved or an opportunity to have more compassion in that person's life, that young child's life. And often parents are equipped to do that, often parents aren't. We've seen from Dublin 17 Educate, or the Preparing for Life scheme, that the right intervention with the right empowerment, bringing parents on board and viewing parents as part of the solution, not part of the problem, can have massive positive benefits for children and for the wider community.
It seems to be a problem with, and I'm not just picking it on one particular party, but it seems to be across the board in all the governments we've had so far, there doesn't seem to have been the emphasis on putting money in early. And it don't mean just in education, but I mean in health, you name it. There seems to be.
Well, we did it. I mean, but we did it, but we didn't necessarily get a huge amount of credit for it because other things took over. And people can. The visual is very big in Irish politics. So I don't want to go back to the argument about the water charges, for example. But that was a very visual thing that people had a reaction to. Somebody was actually installing something at the end of your driveway. You were getting a new envelope to your door, and that's why there was a reaction against it. But if I say to you that we put 30 million into 13 different anti-poverty strategies based on areas for children, people probably won't even know that. But that's exactly what happened. We replicated the Preparing for Life and the Young Ballymun project, and we rolled it out in 13 different disadvantaged areas across the country. People aren't aware of that. We also introduced under 6 free GP care for every child. Not necessarily well publicised or get a huge amount of credit for it. So I think this is sometimes the problem, is that we're not good at identifying good interventions for children that work, and focus can be sometimes placed on other things. And your mistakes are always amplified more than necessarily your successes. But I would accept 30 million, not a huge amount of money. But then what also happens then, you try the government, even at the moment, the biggest controversy about the children's hospital, that should be a good project, a good positive news story. But of course, the story now is about the overrun and the excess money being spent on it.
Indeed, and none of us can. And we're straying off topic, I know, but I think anybody who has is a little bit focused on this knows. Look, it's probably not the right location, but it's there. It's happening. Let's get it done. But what we should be focusing on is keeping it going, but then also, and personally, it's my own view, is we should be getting someone like the Fraud Squad in to check over, to make sure everything's kosher, anything else.
It is a different topic. I know we want to talk about the 14 bucks as well, but like, I suppose investment in children and at all levels has to be supported and has to be, has to be something that is a priority for everybody. You will find, though, often in politics that it is those who have power, voting power, are the ones who attract the most attention at general election time. And that can be maybe people of an older generation, mm-hmm. or people who come from areas of high voter turnout, and areas of low voter turnout or younger people can be forgotten about. I'm actually a big advocate for compulsory or required voting, not because I want to annoy anybody, but what's actually happened in Australia or countries like that where they do have required voting is that politicians spend as much time with younger people as they do with older people, in poorer areas as they do in richer areas, because the vote that everybody has the exact same value, and that's something that I think we should consider from an equality perspective.
I have to say, I wouldn't disagree with you. I wouldn't disagree with you, but I wonder, has anybody done any work on how much money you save by putting money into education early?
No, but I know how expensive it is for somebody who's, on social welfare annually, it's about 20,000. But it's not just the financial figure; it's also the cost of that person's self-esteem or the family around them. In terms of incarceration, somebody in a prison can be six figures. It's just an absolute complete waste, and I'm a big advocate for changing our drug policy. I mean, 70% of our drug cases that go through our courts are for people who have drug addictions themselves, who have drug use issues, who have been caught for something that they were just using themselves for their own drug use, and that's a complete waste of money for our court system and our prison system. So, we need to maybe take a step back from a lot of these issues and look at them differently. But again. You're sometimes advocating for people who don't get the access to the mainstream media or to the airwaves or newspaper columns to talk about their own experiences, and we can be a bit judgmental as to reasons why people get sucked into addiction in the first place. But I know we've gone way off topic, but politics does come down to power and to those who have influence. But if we're being serious about tackling things such as drug addiction, why do we have so many sick people in prison? It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, well, funny, if you're talking about a topic I won't say I know a lot about, but I know a little bit about. I did some work with Sister Concilio and Coonwirra. And yeah. I met a lot of people in there. The stories they tell you, and these are people who are just the exact same as me, no different than me. Their life could have been the exact same as my life, but things happened, and they could have been supported better.
And then what happens, I think, sometimes is that there's stigma around people who put their hands up and say, I have an addiction issue, and we're very bad at that in Ireland, and I found that when I was drugs minister, there may be an occasion where a middle-class student dies of an overdose in a nightclub for taking a pill, and there'd be a huge two-page spread about that person's, life and the opportunities they could have had, and their friends are so upset and all the rest. It's viewed as something that's been lost to society. But if somebody dies of a heroin overdose in the toilet of a shopping centre, there's no two-page spread because people think it's their own fault. So, we have a lot of self-examination to do in Irish society about the way we view hurt, vulnerability, how people, treat their own pain. People do that by taking things they possibly shouldn't. But then when something bad does happen, an overdose does happen, we have a very different view of people from different backgrounds. And that's not fair. Certainly not fair in the family. And it doesn't actually get us anywhere, because if somebody's going to talk about the experiences of the why they got sucked into addiction, if they put their hand up and people start calling them names or start blaming them for their own drug use, well then the problem is just going to perpetuate itself.
Indeed. And now I know time is moving on, and we better talk about the number 14 bus.
Yes, yes, indeed.
They're proposing changes to the number 14 bus. Tell us about them.
Well, you know, of course, it used to be the 20B, and and the 20B changed to the 14, and that was a bit of a campaign to ensure that we retained the connectivity between Dunnecarney Village, if you like, and Artane Castle, because many people from Dunnecarney would like to, you know, access services in Artane Castle and obviously Beaumont Hospital as well. So there's actually a proposal to replace the 14 with three different services, one that would go all the way down Collins Avenue, one that would that would go down Beaumont Road and then the Swords Road, if you like, on the town, and a third one. But none of them do what the 14 would do. None of them would connect Beaumont Hospital, Artane Castle, and Dunnecarney and the city centre. So what we did was to, in a polite enough way, rather than trying to have a row about it, seeing as it is a consultation period that the NTA are doing, and I'm not really the type of person to stand up and decide that the NTA are trying to destroy everybody's lives deliberately, was to do a petition postcard locally, and we delivered a number of thousands of postcards with an online petition, and we got about 1,500 signatories from people who want to retain the 14 bus as is. So that consultation period finished before Christmas, but what we wanted to do was to send in a petition on top of that to say, look, this is the depth of feeling locally about the 14 bus. So the NTA are coming back to the community, and I think it's at the end of this month with new revised proposals. We would hope that they would take on board the views clearly expressed in the Beaumont, Dunnecarney, Artane communities about the number 14 bus and how important it is. I'm pretty confident that the original plan, as put out, will be radically changed, and I think if it was, it would be a good thing.
Well, I have a couple of interests in this because I live on Collins Avenue, down the Dunnecarney end, and
very good.
I worked for Tesco for what, 34 years. So
right, the 14 was your or the 20B even at once upon a time was your preferred
that's transport. But I think the important thing here is the hospital.
Yeah.
You might say that whole area of Dunnecarney and Elmount and all that are all, it's a settled area.
Absolutely. Yeah,
and people are getting more mature. And easy access to the hospital is very important.
I think so. I think a lot of the bus connect plans were actually quite reasonable. There was a bit of controversy over the 123 in Marino, but I think on balance it was probably a reasonable proposal to make a small change there. Some of the bus routes changes are fair enough, making them more direct, making them more regular, which is good too. But there's a few buses now that just do things that are perfect given the demographic of the area. As you say yourself, if you have a more elderly area, well, then you need a different type of bus service in an area that might be new or whatever. So the 14 just does the business. Now, that's not to say it doesn't, you know, irritate people who are trying to come around the corner there at Collins Avenue and Beaumont Road and stay there in traffic for endless, what feels like endlessly. But I think when a community engage in a consultation process and say, look, this is your plan, this is our experience, there should be a potential there for a compromise on both sides. So there's also, just so your listeners know, if they live anywhere near the Malahide Road, that there's a separate consultation from the NTA about the main bus corridors, and the one from that basically goes all the way down the Malahide Road, which the plan is to cut through all the roundabouts, get rid of all the roundabouts in the Malahide Road, and take over about 120 properties that are going to be affected by the new bus corridor, and to have a new cycle lane that goes through Marino. So that consultation period and submissions on that ends next Friday the 15th of February, and we're having a meeting in Marino on the 12th of February, Tuesday at 8:30 in the Carlton Hall, just to talk through how people might put in their submissions on that.
That's a very good idea, and that's in the Carlton Hall in Marino.
Tuesday, yeah.
Top of Shelmartin Avenue.
That's it. Yes, exactly. At half eight on Tuesday. So we're inviting anybody who lives in the Malahide Road, but particularly there's people in Marino who are affected by this new cycle lane proposal. Most people don't have an issue with the cycle lane, but the problem is that if cycle traffic goes one way, then the potential for car traffic to follow it is what they're worried about. So that's our meeting on Tuesday, just to be able to engage in these in the consultation process constructively between now and the end of next week.
I remember when the Carlton Hall was a wooden structure and they held dances in there.
Oh, well, no.
That's gone back before you were born.
Well, maybe we'll have a dance there and get you off the golf course and treading the tiles again.
Indeed. Listen, thank you very much for giving me your time. But what I'd love to talk to you about, not today, but at another time, is maybe to get talk about the Griffith Avenue proposals and to get the truth out there about what people are talking about, because there's an awful lot of bluster being put out by certain radio stations at the moment. We won't mention them.
Yeah, we should talk about it again, but look, I have no difficulty. I mean, we need housing. We absolutely need housing.
Totally.
We need development, and everybody accepts that, but that doesn't mean that a planning application that comes across anybody's desks should just be allowed to go ahead without any comment from anybody.
Totally.
And we went through that period in the 70s and 80s, and we had tribunals as a result. We had Priory Hall. A man lost his life over Priory Hall. I was in a meeting in a certain part of the city down on Tuesday night about residents who have basically defective structures that were constructed 20 years ago and still trying to remedy them. So if the day arrives where somebody in political life or in community life can't say anything about a private developer's plan, well, then that's going to be a sad day. There was planning permission for 101 units there in Griffith Avenue. People were reasonably happy with that.
Yes.
Now it becomes 385. That's a big escalation in the profit margins for the person who is making that application. And we had a meeting, as we do, and the principal of the local school says, well, I now have a tower block overlooking my school. But if you say anything about it, you're accused of objecting to housing. We're not objecting to housing. We're just in favour of community driven planning and not developer driven planning, but we'll find the proper balance, I'm quite sure.
Senator Reardon, many thanks for chatting with me.